Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Alzheimer Association International Conference concluded yesterday in Boston, and the week produced a number of studies which offer novel treatment and prevention strategies, along with possible new risk factors and advances in early detection and diagnosis for this illness that affects about one out of every eight adults over the age of 65. The conference brought together nearly 5,000 researchers and experts from around the world to discuss and present research on Alzheimer's disease and dementia. My guest today is the CEO and president of the Oklahoma chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, Mark Fried. He joins us today to share some of the latest research findings from the conference. The Oklahoma chapter is currently also raising $400,000 to help Oklahoma families and fund research through their annual Walk to End Alzheimer's, which is scheduled for Saturday, August 24th at the Cityplex Towers with a 5K, 1.5 mile walk, and other events. Mark Fried joins us today on Studio Tulsa to discuss the latest in the fight against Alzheimer's. Mark Fried, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and always a pleasure to get a chance to talk about the things involving the Alzheimer's Association.
Now, the international conference is just concluding as we're speaking today, and there have been a number of interesting research topics that have come out of the big international conference. What's been most interesting to you?
I think from a research, you know, a more specific kind of pharmacological or biomedical research that has really jumped off the page at me is the development involving beta amyloid. And beta amyloid is a protein commonly associated with the development and the progression of Alzheimer's disease. And there's currently a study by the company called Merck, a Merck study that was shared this week in Boston that has shown some promising, yet just the initial results. And the study includes people with mild to moderate Alzheimer's, and it shows that there's a significantly lowered level of beta amyloid in cerebrospinal fluid when using this particular drug. It actually showed that from baseline, from where they originally took the cerebrospinal fluid, and they said, here's the baseline where the beta amyloid level is. Once they went in, you know, started taking this particular treatment, that it showed a reduction of, on average, of more than 80%. And so, you know, the feeling is, and the hope is that this will start to help show a positive treatment for in the progression of the disease, and especially the onset. And so, you know, that's one that has come out that is more of the traditional research, I think, that most people think of when they're wondering what's on the horizon, what's going to be working. Well, this particular one is showing great promise in just reduction of that particular protein, the beta amyloid protein, which hopefully will lead to good results as things go forward. It's always tough to talk about this issue when we're living in an age where we want all of our information to come, you know, zapped to us right on our phones. The thing to remember is that when it comes to medical research, it is a long process. Really, you have to wait until the rubber meets the road, and that could take some time for that to play out. But nonetheless, this is showing that there's progress and hope on the horizon.
Now, how important is this protein beta amyloid in the association with Alzheimer's?
It's one of the key components. Beta amyloid is actually a sticky protein that it's the protein that starts to cause the plaque, and which then leads to the tangles of the neurons in the brain. And so the theory is that if the beta amyloid protein can be reduced, then it will reduce the overall amount of plaque buildup within the brain. And it's believed that the plaque then is the thing that causes those neurons, those in the brain, to fold upon themselves or to tangle upon themselves, which is a telltale sign and a very common sign of Alzheimer's disease. And so to be able to reduce that, hopefully will show maybe a pathway to improve treatment at the very least.
Is this a new drug that's being tested, or is this already an existing drug, a new use for the drug? Because I heard some interesting news about an existing drug, too, as well.
Well, this is in the pipeline of clinical trials. So this is not ready for market yet. This is actually going through the clinical trial process where there are volunteers who are making themselves available to be a part of that. There is an existing drug. It's actually a diabetes drug,
that's
which is
right.
Is fascinating. There's a diabetes drug called metformin, and there was a study of about 15,000 patients who are over the age of 55 and have type 2 diabetes. And in this particular trial, they started those individuals on metformin, which is it's a sensitizer for insulin. And what is shown is that there's a significantly reduced risk of developing dementia compared with patients who started other regular types of diabetes therapies. And so the trials are currently underway to evaluate metformin as a potential therapy for dementia and mild cognitive impairment. And so what's interesting is it's a drug that is for diabetes, but are showing promise in Alzheimer's. And we've known for years that there is a significantly increased risk for developing Alzheimer's for those who are diabetic. And so I think the hope is that this could be possibly something that could be a kill two birds with one stone type of approach. So we would see the upside for both.
Although it could be just as much as I think I've read that the type 2 diabetes doubles the risk of dementia. Maybe if it just breaks it back to 100% of, then that's probably even good as well.
Well, knowing that there's no way to effectively treat the disease or slow the disease itself, we have things on the market right now that are specifically there to help slow and curb the symptoms, but nothing to actually treat the disease. And so if there's anything that could be helpful in actually changing the pathway of the disease and at the very least, slowing down the progression, then we need that breakthrough. And we haven't had that yet. And the hope is something along the lines of this particular study could be that first step that leads to the things that would really change the landscape of the global epidemic.
When you hear research like that about a diabetes drug that might have a reduced risk of dementia, and I know there was another piece of news which looks at most kinds of cancer, decreases the risk of Alzheimer's. In fact, chemotherapy might also have an additional decrease in Alzheimer's risk. That gives us a sense that the research is maturing on Alzheimer's. I mean, we've been doing enough research now that, you're seeing all these other age-related illnesses. They all sort of fit into a mix, don't they?
They do. There's a better understanding that Alzheimer's is a health issue that is a part of an individual's overall health. And so when you start thinking of health issues that we have known about for years, like cancer and diabetes and heart disease and a variety of things, for such a long time, Alzheimer's was really just thought to be a memory issue, but the reality is that the more we learn about the disease, there is a direct connection between Alzheimer's disease and our overall health. And as you mentioned, there's even some information that's being shared this week about risk factors for and a link between cancer treatments and Alzheimer's disease, which is fascinating because, as you said, this has not been the approach in the past. It has been always very singular and siloed, but now the more that the medical community understands about how Alzheimer's and what Alzheimer's actually is, they're starting to look at how it interacts and possibly could be connected with other health risks.
Now, of course, when we're talking about Alzheimer and just keeping your brain healthy as you age, a lot of researchers for a lot of time and doctors have suggested that, keeping your brain active, engaged, learning new activities, learning different things and learning about things in new ways through new learning methods, it keeps the brain stimulated. And it seems to, I think there's always been a lot of folk wisdom that will keep you from suffering dementia or will reduce your risk of dementia. There was actually an interesting study which looked at some self-employed workers in France that suggested that retiring at an older age reduces your risk of dementia.
That's exactly right, and you're right. It gives credence to the adage of use it or lose it. That particular study, it was what happened is that the researchers looked at health and insurance records of 429,000 people in France. Now think about that. Wrap your mind around 429,000 people in the country of France. That's roughly around half of the population in the city of Tulsa. And they found that, retiring older does reduce the risk of dementia. And for every additional year of working, the risk was reduced by 3%. And, it's all linked back to, as researchers suggested, that professional activity, activity in the workplace may contribute to higher levels of intellectual stimulation and mental engagement, and that could be very protective against dementia. Though, there's obviously more research is needed in this area, but it does go back and reiterate the things that the Alzheimer's Association has been saying for years, is don't allow yourself to just hole up and not learn anything new. I mean, does show that we should treat the brain like we would a muscle, because what happens actually with Alzheimer's disease, it causes the brain to atrophy, you know, from a biological standpoint, and it's not necessarily a muscle, but nonetheless, continued learning, whether it's in the workplace or not, is important. But this one definitely shows that, you know, if you are still physically able, then remaining in the workforce longer can be helpful in this, you know, in this particular instance.
Now, Mark, I know if you watch television much, you're seeing a lot of advertisements for brain games. You know, and I've talked to a number of neuroscientists that say that these brain-activated games, they look like, you know, puzzles that are done online, can hold off on some of your average aging declines. Has there been any research on whether it might prevent Alzheimer's or early-stage dementia?
Everything is really inconclusive when it comes to that, but we know that, you know, engaging those kind of activities does stimulate the brain, and the brain stimulation and you know, having a healthy cardiovascular system and keeping the blood flowing through the brain is important. Now, to what level, we don't know. The one thing that we would say is there any harm in playing these kinds of games that stimulate the brain? And the answer, obviously, is no. Whether it's to help us with mental recall or if it's to help us with our cognitive skills and analytical skills, then those things are, again, use it or lose it, exercising the brain in a way that is not just, you know, sitting in your chair and watching television. And we are a society that is trained to look at a screen, whether it's a computer screen or a TV screen or what have you. And the things that you're seeing, you know, more commonplace in the market, you're promoting, you know, brain games. There's no downside to that, because it does stimulate the brain to some degree. Now, will it help in staving off? There's no conclusive evidence, and to my knowledge, I have not seen any reports of that of any sort of research that's done, you know, specifically on those kinds of activities. But you know, so we don't know really right now. But there's no downside to it.
My guest today is Mark Fried, the president and CEO of the Alzheimer Association's Oklahoma chapter. The Alzheimer Association International Conference has just concluded with a number of interesting research advances, and perhaps the one that's making the most news has to do with Alzheimer disease detection and diagnosis. A study which has looked at self-reported changes in memory could be the earliest clinical markers of Alzheimer's. Basically, we refer to them as senior moments, if you will, this sort of idea of losing the car keys or forgetting appointments that we sort of just call senior moments. If those go on and escalate, these self-reported memory changes often are they're found to precede mental decline by about 6 years. This is sort of important, that the idea that doctors usually will dismiss this is something maybe doctors should take more seriously?
Well, there's no doubt about that. You know, for some time, the Alzheimer's Association has been stressing that individuals would treat Alzheimer's disease and the potential for, you know, within warning signs, treated in a way that we would with any other disease. So, you know, the earlier that we're able to catch it, the better opportunity there is for treatment and for, you know, more quality of life and longer quality of life. And there's actually five reports that were presented in Boston this week that found that, you know, healthy people who say that their thinking is growing cloudy or they may already have changes in their brains, that's actually showing that there is credence to that. And those individuals are twice as probable to be diagnosed with a cognitive disorder at some point in time. I mean, for years, people have complained about, you know, their memories, and doctors have told them, don't worry about it. It's just, you know, part of getting old. It happens to all of us. But it's now being taken more seriously as an early warning signal and gives really – I think the most intriguing part for me is with the Alzheimer's Association and the, you know, what we're trying to accomplish with just eradicating the world of the disease is that this kind of thing starts to give investigators a potential screening tool to identify those who will progress more quickly. So actually what happened in this particular research is there's one particular report that showed that they had 189 participants in, for one of these studies, and they had each of them fill out a 100-question questionnaire. And of those who complained and were most concerned about their memory loss was actually showing a higher level of beta-amyloid protein in the brain, which is, as we said earlier, is one of the just the foundations of Alzheimer's disease. And so they were identifying that I'm concerned about this, and they're already feeling like that, you know, things aren't exactly the way they should be or the way they always have been. And then there's with the research behind that, they're actually showing an elevated level of beta amyloid. You know, the hardest part in these kinds of situations is deciding what is normal aging and what is abnormal. I mean, we all lose our car keys.
We
all walk out of the grocery store and we say, now where did I park my car? And we've been doing that, you know, all our lives. And if the difference is that, you know, if you forget how to use a key or you find your keys in the refrigerator inexplicably, then that just make you stop and think. And, you know, the results have made immediate applications for researchers who are beginning studies aimed at slowing or stopping Alzheimer's disease before full-blown symptoms appear. And in order to do that, they need more and more people to be involved in those clinical trials. And this can be one of those indicators that if someone is expressing their own concern about themselves, then they may be an individual who would not only benefit from wanting to be a part of these sorts of things, but it could benefit the overall global effort to end the disease. Now, in scenarios like this, the Alzheimer's Association, you know, urges people to become familiar with the warning signs of Alzheimer's as compared to what is normal part of aging. And so it's not just simply, oh, well, if you think you're getting Alzheimer's than you have, there's more to it than that. It is a multidisciplined diagnostic process, and so we don't want anyone to try to use this kind of thing and to self-diagnose and to use this information to self-diagnose. But if you're starting to have those questions about yourself, then we urge you to visit your doctor and share this kind of information with them and share your own concerns, because that could be very helpful in the diagnostic process.
And I'm sure everybody who's hearing this is going, well, I've had memory lapses. And it's important to remember that nearly everybody has memory lapses, but only, you know, what, one out of eight, one, you know, I don't know what the actual statistic is, but only a fraction will develop dementia, or early onset, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, here in America, one out of eight over the age of 65 have Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. One out of eight. And that's it's an alarming possibility that I could be one of eight. You know, sitting around a table with friends at a function, you start to look around and you say, okay, there's eight people here at the table. Which one of those people have it? Well, it could be me. But one out of eight is significant. But when you look at the overall number, it's not something that everybody's going to develop. It's not a normal part of aging. It's not something that we know that's in store for each person. But it's big enough to know that I need to be cognizant for myself, and I really want to see progress made so I don't have to deal with it, so my kids or my grandkids don't have to deal with it someday. And that's what the whole purpose of this annual conference of the Alzheimer's Association International Conference is. It's all about. Is to help us find a way to create a world without the disease.
Of course, that statistic is somewhat scary when you think one out of eight, but when you think of the self-selected group of 65 and over, you have to realize you're 13 years away from the average end of life. Although if you make it to 65, I guess you're more likely to live into your 80s at that particular point.
Right.
My guest today is Mark Fried, the President and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association of Oklahoma's chapter, And the International Alzheimer's Association Conference has just concluded with some interesting research, other things about disease detection and diagnosis. A couple of studies looked interesting to me for their very skeptical look at some various detection ideas, like online tests. They don't measure up. There was also the idea of looking at population screening for dementia. UK researchers decided that's probably not the best way to go.
Well, absolutely not. There has been things that we have during that particular research. It's a systematic review of the studies that looked at populations broadly and compared the outcomes with a routine pattern of care in the general population, and there's no evidence of the effect of screening on patient outcomes, including cognitive, mental, and emotional health, social function and planning, and no indication of its added value compared to current practice. When you start to think of how are we going to address this issue? Well, here in America, for sure, we look to our government and say, fix it. And that ends up being, an approach that we tend to do is to go to our elected officials and say, hey, we need to solve this problem. Go do it and do it the easiest and most cost-efficient way possible. And, the researchers, they warn that policymakers should be very cautious about adopting population screening for dementia without any evidence of benefit or risks. We just as I said before, we point people to go back to your doctor and go through the diagnostic process for yourself, because we're not going to do population screening for cancer. We're not going to do population screening for HIV/AIDS or any other disease, and Alzheimer's should be no different. It really is we're talking about an individual and their own personal health makeup, and it should be approached really more on an individual standpoint on the actual diagnosis. You mentioned also as far as for folks to find things online that could be sort of misleading or even just difficult to do is to go through a diagnostic process online. What's our answer to everything if we don't know the answer? Google it, right?
Yeah, right.
You get on your phone, you jump on the internet and you Google it, and that can be, especially in this situation, we're finding that that could be very detrimental in a variety of ways. So the very first thing we say is do not try to self-diagnose. The association has been saying that for quite some time, but now there's actually a panel of Canadian experts who reviewed 16 freely accessible online tests for Alzheimer's disease. And within that review, they found that three-fourths of them scored poor or very poor for overall scientific validity and reliability. And they also concluded that these tests are not useful for the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And, though the tests were free, and here's probably the more tangible feel or the more tangible impact, though those tests were free, the participants ended up spending an average of $14,000 in medical costs while pursuing follow-up help because of the online diagnosis. So they go online, they take a free online test. It says you have Alzheimer's. It then causes, in all probability, it's a bad diagnosis. It is not accurate, and yet the person who takes that test, it causes them emotional despair. They then start chasing an actual diagnosis, and it starts costing them money out of pocket, simply because they have trusted what is on the internet to be a diagnostic tool, as opposed to taking a look at the overall issue, familiarizing themselves with the warning signs of the disease, and going through an appropriate diagnosis.
And it was interesting that a study showed that all 16 of the online tests had some sort of conflict of interest or was ethically challenged. So, I mean, those online tests are there to sell you something. In our last couple of minutes, Mark, if you would, tell us a little about the work of the Oklahoma chapter. I know you have something called Trial Match. What is that?
Trial Match is an effort that the Alzheimer's Association launched 3 years ago. One of the number one hurdle to advancing research is the lack of funds. And you know, one of the things the Alzheimer's Association is doing is pursuing the opportunity to get the National Institutes of Health, or NIH, to invest more dollars into Alzheimer's research. And that, if that's priority number one, then priority 1A is getting more and more people involved in the clinical trial process and willing to be a part of that. If we had all the money that we felt like we need to advance Alzheimer's research, we still would have an issue because we don't have enough people in the pipeline who are willing to participate in the research process. And so what TrialMatch is, it's a tool that takes an individual who may be in early stages of the disease, they may be a caregiver, they may be a researcher, they may be a healthy volunteer who wants to be a part of the process, and you go in, you create a profile. It's very, very simple. You create a profile by going online. It's alz.org/trialmatch, and as you create your profile, you start to set up parameters for the kind of studies that you would be willing to consider being a part of. And including in that is things like a radius from where, you know, how far are you willing to travel? Are you willing to go anywhere in the United States? Are you looking for something within a 50 or 90-mile radius or whatever the case may be? And then as time goes on, for instance, if you registered today at TrialMatch, then let's say 6 months from now, there's a new trial that was a clinical trial post here in Tulsa that you would be interested in being a part of, you would receive an email and notification that there is a new clinical trial right here that fits within the parameters that you have set for yourself, and here's the information. Would you be interested or willing to be a part of it? So it's a tool that the Alzheimer's Association designed because we just need more, we need more of it all. Yeah. We need more dollars, and we need more people involved in it.
Very quickly, I know you have a Walk to End Alzheimer coming up in Tulsa here in August. When is that date, and how do people get information?
Well, August the 24th is the Walk to End Alzheimer's here in Tulsa, and it's a time where we'll have upwards of 3,000 Tulsans who will gather at Cityplex Towers, which is down here on the ORU campus. It's a morning event. It's a Saturday morning. You'll come. You'll be a part of that. We need people to sign up to participate. They need to go to TulsaWalk.org. Register to be a participant, email your friends, ask them to support you, post on Facebook, ask them to support you, and it's amazing how just by being a part of that and being willing to participate and ask folks to support your efforts, just how many people are willing to help. And it's really come one, come all, and be a part of it and help us raise the dollars to advance the research that needs to be done, as well as help us reach out and provide care and support to those who are affected by the disease.
Well, we appreciate you sharing some of the latest research from the conference. Mark Fried, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it once again. Thanks so much. I'd be happy to be there anytime.
Mark Fried is the CEO and president of the Oklahoma chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. The Oklahoma chapter will be raising money in their annual Walk to End Alzheimer's on Saturday, August 24th at the Cityplex Towers. For more information on the activities of the Alzheimer's Association here in Oklahoma and nationwide, visit alz.org/Oklahoma. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.